It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Just ahead, we take a look at how many seniors seem to be out of sight and out of mind.
I'm a little bit angry that our society and our culture does not take care of our senior citizens. It baffles me.
That's coming up in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection reached an agreement with an Alabama company over the cost of plugging 1,400 abandoned oil and gas wells in the state. For State Impact Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports.
The agreement requires Diversified Gas and Oil to put up a $7 million bond to cover the costs of plugging the wells, which are mostly in western Pennsylvania. Diversified owns over 23,000 conventional wells in the state. Last year, the DEP found that many of them were no longer producing oil and gas and ordered them shut. After the company appealed, the two sides reached the agreement. DEP spokeswoman Lauren Fraley says the agreement means the state won't have to pay to clean up the wells should the company fail to do so.
We feel that this $7 million settlement is more reflective of the actual cost that it might take to plug a well, should the company walk away for whatever reason.
The agreement requires the company to plug all 1,400 wells or put them into production by the year 2033. Reed Frazier, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
President Trump's 2020 federal budget proposal includes changes that would cut funds allotted for a new federal prison in eastern Kentucky. Sydney Bowles reports that move will likely face opposition in Congress.
President Trump's 2020 budget proposal includes $2.7 trillion in spending cuts. Among those cuts is a plan to reduce spending on a federal prison planned for Letcher County. Kentucky Republican Congressman Hal Rogers sits on the powerful House Appropriations Committee. In a written statement to the Ohio Valley Resource, Rogers called the reduction in funding a, quote, gimmick, and vowed to continue fighting for the project. The $510 million facility has faced serious opposition from local and national activists who say the prison isn't necessary and would not bring significant economic benefits to the struggling region. Judah Shep is a professor of criminal justice at Eastern Kentucky University. He's been among the prison project's most vocal critics. He says cutting funds to the project doesn't change the politics of mass incarceration.
The proposal to zero out the funding for USP Letcher doesn't reflect some commitment on the part of the Trump administration to prison reform. And in fact, it's part of a domestic austerity package.
The president's budget blueprint is not likely to dictate actual spending levels, which are controlled by Congress. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles.
Caring for a loved one as they age can be incredibly demanding. It can also leave you feeling forsaken by society, especially as families move away from the home base, leaving fewer and fewer people to share responsibilities. Carol Lofton reports about a growing problem in need of innovative solutions.
Tricia Kingery is part of what some social scientists call the sandwich generation. She's simultaneously responsible for caring for her daughter, age 6, and her aging mom.
I have two sisters who I love dearly, but they both live in Florida. So it's me. And we have some family, but over time, family shrinks and people move away. And really, I'm the only one my mom can count on. So there's a lot on my shoulders.
Kingery is an educated small business owner and the very epitome of an energetic go-getter. But after her dad died and the responsibility of caring for her mom fell to her, she says she struggled to find help.
And I have found finding the supports, services, support, resources, friendships, whatever, to be the most challenging thing I've ever seen. I'm a little bit angry that our society and our culture does not take care of our senior citizens. It baffles me. They're so vulnerable and they're so lonely.
Not only is Kingery in the sandwich generation, trying to balance work, marriage, motherhood, and caring for her own mother, but her mom, a retired English teacher who was married to a retired principal, is middle income, which means that she makes too much to qualify for a lot of the state services, yet also doesn't bring in enough each month to afford private care. Kingery says there are a handful of programs in the state that offer sliding fee rates for their services.
But still, that's an hourly rate. And if you multiply that by 24 hours or 8 hours or even 4 hours, there goes her whole money.
Jenny Sutherland, executive director of Putnam County Aging, says situations like Kingery's are not an anomaly.
I find that the people who really struggle the most are those who are just over that income asset guideline for Medicaid, but and have worked hard their whole lives and have saved. And then they're not eligible because they have a couple thousand extra dollars in the bank or whatever.
Part of the problem, she says, is that people, especially in the more urban areas, aren't staying in their home communities the way they used to.
If you get out into some of those really rural areas, you've got five generations of a family maybe living in the same holler, and they're all right there, and they can provide support and help to each other. But you get into Kanawha County and Cabell County, some of the more urban areas, and a lot of those kids have moved on, and they don't have the family support.
As baby boomers age and their children leave the state, some residents are looking for innovative solutions to help affordably manage senior care, including Jennifer Wagner. Wagner sits outside of a doctor's office, waiting on a patient to finish an eye appointment.
Hi, sweetie.
Wagner is the executive director of Faith in Action of the Greater Kanawha Valley, a volunteer organization that provides services, including transportation, to seniors for free.
Did your appointment go okay?
Yes, I've been there for a while, wasn't
it? Yeah, you were.
Wagner worked for the Alzheimer's Association for a number of years. She said at the time she was not only just working in the field, but caring for her own aging parents. Trying to find services for them, she found there were big gaps in services available, and she wanted to change that. So she started Faith in Action in 2014.
Primarily in terms of transportation to medical appointments or the grocery store, reassurance calls, social isolation, preventative measures, things of that nature.
Faith in Action is a volunteer-driven organization that provides transportation to doctor's appointments, the grocery store, visitation, and honey-do crews that provide maintenance, painting, and yard work free of cost. In October of 2018, they had more than 200 volunteers serving more than 530 seniors in Kanawha and Putnam counties. She said as West Virginia ages, she expects the need for services like Faith in Action to grow even more.
We have to find and exploit creative and innovative ideas that are out there in the community. There needs to be a lot more collaboration. There needs to be a lot more of discussion and conversation and actual acknowledgement that this problem is coming.
Although Wagner is executive director, she still volunteers a couple times a month. While waiting on a patient to get out of the doctor's office, she often receives calls.
Hello, this is Jennifer.
Yes, I'm trying to get in touch with someone at Faith in Action.
How can I help you?
I have a mom who is 91 years old.
A couple of weeks ago, that could have been Tricia Kingery. Kingery was desperate for help with her mom, even if it was just someone her mom could talk to on a daily basis other than her. Kingery stumbled upon Faith in Action. She took Wagner to lunch and recently submitted an application for her mom. But Faith in Action isn't in every county in West Virginia, which means although the program provides some relief to families like Kingery's, many more families are still struggling. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. About 6.5 million animals enter shelters each year across the country, according to the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. About half that number are adopted. Others are euthanized, returned to their owners, or just stay in shelters. March is an especially busy time for animal shelters because this is when many puppies and kittens are born. Roxy Todd has this profile of one stray dog who made quite a name for himself earlier this winter.
Okay, like many stray dogs, there are mysteries with Miller's story. Here's what we know. Miller's a small black and brown dog. He looks like he has a little chihuahua in him. He was found roaming free in Charleston, then brought into the local animal shelter. Eventually, a family adopted him, but soon afterwards, he escaped.
Miller the dog is a scrappy, independent dog that was loose for a couple of weeks.
But nobody could ever get close to him, and he was always just like a bullet. He was always in full speed, like he had somewhere to go.
From what I could tell, he was just a small dog, but he had these long legs. And any pictures that were posted of him, you could kind of see his small body, but his legs were blurry, just because he was always on the run.
These are some of my neighbors, Megan Smith, Candy Henderson, and Emmett Pepper. We live in the east end of Charleston, where Miller was on the run for almost a month in the coldest part of winter. One thing nobody really knows is how he got here. The family who initially adopted him live almost 6 miles away.
Miller became a celebrity of sorts on the local neighborhood conversation boards because people were really worried about his safety and concerned that he wasn't going to be anywhere warm overnight, especially and when it was in the single digits.
There was a post saying, let's get this dog before, you know, the cold hits. It's not safe, obviously, for him to be out.
We saw Miller over by the Capitol. So we went to try to get Miller, chased him around for about 45 minutes. He just kept going. He would stop for a while and look at us, let us catch up, and then just keep running.
It became clear that this was no ordinary dog. I once stopped for Miller, offered him half my cookie. He bolted with this smug look on his face. We all wanted to be the one to catch him. On social media, his status blew up. Memes were made about him. Someone made him a Facebook profile. Brandy Odell, another neighbor, was organizing the search. She had her phone number on posters all over the neighborhood, and she was getting lots of Miller sightings.
And so I got calls daily, and they were sightings, but Miller was so fast there was no way that I could respond to each of those calls because he would just simply be gone by the time I got there.
But then, on Valentine's Day, a hound dog named Charlie was out walking with his owner. Miller went over to Charlie to play. Here's Sean Dunlap, Charlie's owner.
My dog basically is the one that helped catch him. He was the one that kept him there most of the whole time. So,
do you feel like he's the hero of the story?
Well, sort of, I guess, because everybody been trying to catch him for so long, could never get him.
Sean reached out and grabbed Miller, who wasn't happy about being caught.
He looked like he was, a captured fugitive or something.
Sean called the number from all the posters about Miller. Again, here's Brandy.
And so I was like, wait a minute, are you telling me that you have apprehended this dog? And they said yes. And so I said, oh my gosh, I'm on my way. So I ran out of here and went to get him. And of course, Miller was terrified, naturally, to be expected. And when I held him, he had little tears running out of his eyes. And he was just so scared. And I was just like, oh, little baby, it's going to be okay. And he kissed my nose. And so I knew then that, you know, it was going to be okay. He was going to be fine.
Oh, yeah?
So what is Miller's future? That's the question we've all been asking. The family who originally adopted him from the shelter decided they weren't the best fit. Miller is just too fast and needs a special owner who can train him. Otherwise, he'll probably just run away again. Several different people in the neighborhood have been fostering him, getting him to his vet appointments, and house training him. Brandy and some of the other volunteer rescuers are hoping they'll find an owner for Miller who can keep up with his speed and appreciate his wild ways.
I think that Miller would make an awesome agility dog. He is fast. It became a joke in the Facebook world that he was the fastest dog alive.
For now, Miller is resting up and enjoying the comfort of having a warm bed. He likes to sleep in and doesn't always like to get up in the mornings to go for a walk, especially when it's cold. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd in Charleston.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.